Hey there, welcome to The Greenhouse. I'm Brendan Ball.
And I'm Anna Snow, and stay tuned for all things planet Earth.
This is the second to last time we're doing this, so
yes.
We're going to make this a good one.
Mm-hmm.
A little later on the show, we are based out of Phoenix, so we're going to talk about Phoenix today.
Mm-hmm.
It's something called the Phoenix Climate Action Plan. It was this groundbreaking thing passed in 2021. We're going to talk about its strengths, its
mm-hmm.
shortcomings, how it's doing so far. Are they actually promising?
Yes.
What
it, we talked about it when it was a bit newer, when it was, you know, maybe first had came out and stuff, but we're going to do a little update on it.
Exactly. And an election just happened here in the Valley, and new money got allocated.
Yes.
So we're going to see, is it going to causes that this plan outlined?
Find out later.
And then we're also going to talk a little bit about a climate conference happening nationwide. This is something called COP28. We've talked about COP27 before,
mm-hmm.
a year ago.
We have.
So this is a continuing coverage topic on The Greenhouse, and we're going to talk about what is happening. There's actually something really interesting happening with the Paris Climate Accords.
Okay.
That we're going to get into a little bit. But in today's Climate Minute, which we've started
Climate Minute.
We came up with that.
I wish we had remembered that, or not remembered, come up with that sooner, but here's our Climate Minute.
Exactly. We wanted to address something that has made the rounds because of Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
If you may have heard that she had a performance in Brazil, in
mm-hmm.
Rio de Janeiro, and a fan died. Now, this is being attributed to local media, from local media, that it was just because of the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And it got us talking about, you know, Phoenix has heat waves, but so does South America, so does Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And this extreme heat can have a deadly effect. So
yes.
Just wanted to bring attention to that.
Yes. I also, if we're talking about Taylor Swift, I remember not too long ago it came out that she, of all the celebrities, has the most emissions and stuff from her use of her private jet. So,
yeah,
we're not, well, at least, I guess I won't speak for this. I am not a huge fan of that, as someone who cares a lot about the environment and stuff like that.
Yeah. It is a tough thing.
Mm-hmm.
Private jets, they look so cool, but they have
yeah.
such negative consequences.
Of course.
So that's today's Climate Minute. I think that actually took a minute, so
mm-hmm.
that was good. We want to talk about COP28. So it's a climate conference that's actually supposed to happen 3 days from now, November 30th. It's a decent conference. It goes till December 12th, so they're going to really hash some stuff out, which is great. Happening in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, and it's self-described, according to the organization's website, as the biggest meeting of the minds when it comes to the environment.
So we talked about COP27. This is 28, of course, now. Are they in different locations?
Different locations. I feel the last one was at a different place.
Okay.
I feel like it was in, like, France or something like that. I'm looking now. It was in Egypt.
Egypt, okay.
It was in Egypt.
Cool.
So we're just going to discuss what is expected
mm-hmm.
to come out of this.
Yes.
One thing, actually, that I saw this morning, not even during the research process, Biden will not be attending.
Interesting.
He will not be attending this major thing slated to talk about the environment. So that is kind of a big deal.
I said, I don't know how that looks for his re-election campaign.
I know, and it's all about that.
Yeah.
The 81-year-old
81,
president.
Yeah, as of, what, last week? The week before?
It was his birthday last episode.
Yeah, last episode.
The excuse is that he will be, quote, remaining stateside as he focuses on domestic affairs. There is a lot happening in the world, but, you know, this happens once a year. John Kerry is being sent. He's the special presidential envoy for climate.
Okay.
I've heard his name before. He was prominent during the Obama
administration. At least there will be some U.S. representation there. That'll be good, you know, if Biden himself can't be there. Someone on behalf of the United States, maybe someone younger, maybe someone who, you know, can talk a little more.
Exactly. And, you know, is structurally good.
He's not geriatric.
But so on the agenda, there's a really big conversation happening that I think we want to tell you about. It's going to concern the Paris Climate Accord.
Which
now,
we've talked about before.
We've talked about before, and even if you're not one who's into the environment,
mm-hmm.
this, chances are you've heard about this. But in a sentence, let's summarize for you. the goal of the Paris Climate Accord is to keep the global temperature average from rising 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's like thing in a what they want to do.
In an ideal world, in a perfect world, that's what it would do.
Kind of. So 2.0 Celsius is the regular like benchmark.
Okay.
In a perfect world, they'd
mm-hmm.
like to keep it 1.5.
Okay.
And lower. So they've kind of given two goals, which
mm-hmm.
kind of defeats the purpose, because wouldn't you want to take the easier goal?
Yeah.
So that's what they're working on right now. But that was passed in 2015. It is now about 8 years after.
Okay.
And I guess there was some clause built into the Paris Climate Accords that they have to take, they have to do something called a stock take. Now, a stock take is a two-year process that happens once every 5 years, basically to evaluate how everything is going.
Okay. That makes sense. I think
that's good. People make goals all the time. It's good you take a look at it.
I think that's a really smart thing to do, you know, like, again, check up on these goals, because there's so much, government talk, and people, you know, want to get reelected and they want the public favor. I think it's really important to have these things where you can check that it's actually happening.
Yes. And so these numbers that we're about to talk are not like official numbers from, you know, the authorities that will do the, calculating this from the
mm-hmm.
NOAA, which we've referenced before.
Of course.
The global surface temperature compared to 1991-2000 is up a degree Celsius. Right now, it's up a degree Celsius from just 1991-2000.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not pre-industrial levels.
No, that is not.
So
it's very
industrial.
It's not
looking good. We have 0.5 degrees Celsius worth of, you know, room to run. And then this comes on top of the fact that, as we know, 2022 was pretty hot. It was the sixth warmest year on record.
I would be interesting to see where 2023 lies in that record, because, you know, we had several days this past summer, several days in a row in July where they were the hottest day ever recorded. And I've heard people say that it was the hottest summer ever recorded and stuff. So it'll be very interesting to see how that averages out at the end of the year and where 2023 will fall.
Exactly. And that's something that we know we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Now we play. It's time for our favorite game on the Greenhouse. Whenever you have these big conferences,
yes.
we look at their agenda and try to make sense of what this means.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the agenda here, and let's see.
We try to put
sense.
Them in layman's terms, basically.
Fast tracking the energy transition and slashing emissions before 2030. So clean energy,
yes.
basically. Transforming climate finance. I think this is something with the way money gets distributed and like
mm-hmm.
building. Environments where there's not a lot of money for like preventions, like flood prevention.
Okay.
Back in the States, Biden likes to use the term environmental justice.
Mm-hmm. He does. I've heard that.
It's something similar to that. Where were we? Here's another one. By delivering on old promises and setting the framework for a new deal on finance. That was a continuation of the old one.
Yes.
Putting nature, people, lives, and livelihoods at the heart of climate action. People first? I mean,
I guess, but I guess nature is first. Technically, on that list, you read nature is first.
Yeah.
And I would assume nature encompasses both, you know, the environment, plants, and animals, you know. Because I feel like, yes, people are hurting, and certainly people in much less privileged countries than we are here in the United States are feeling the effects of climate change worse than we are. But the animals and the plants and the actual physical habitats and the actual environment itself is hurting so much by no fault of its own, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah.
So I like that nature is on that list, because while people are obviously extremely important, you know, you can't, you know, put the rainforest back if it's gone. You can't put the, you know, Arctic, you know, ice back if it's gone. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I, and this last one, which made the least sense to me. Mobilizing for the most inclusive COP ever.
What do they mean by inclusive?
I don't know. Are they saying this is the biggest one? Maybe there's a lot of pressure
includes
to get this?
Includes the most topics, and the most, you know, because they talk about clean energy. They talk about, you know, the climate finance. I would also like to know what they think of, like, actual, like, air pollution and water pollution and different things that are not on this list. I would assume that those type of topics fall under the inclusiveness, maybe something to do with like microplastics, you know, any of the topics really that we've covered on this show all these seasons, I would hope that they'd fall under that inclusive word.
Exactly. And I mean, it's not like this conference doesn't happen often. It happens every year. We've talked about it, I think, 3 times in our 4 seasons here. I do remember talking about COP26.
Yes.
We talk about this every year. So we'll see how it goes. Unfortunately, we will be off the air when, I guess, it ends. But I don't even know what comes out of these meetings, to be mm-hmm. honest. We've talked about it. I don't even know what came out of 2017.
I know. And it feels very, a lot of talk, a lot of, I don't know. And we've talked about before, it's hard to believe big government things happening. And, of course, we live in the United States. And so I'm always inclined to be skeptical of the things I'm being told and the things that are being said. And I think that's no different for politicians from other countries. I guess I can't necessarily really speak for it, but I feel the same way. I feel like it's a lot of talk to get public favor, to get reelected, I haven't seen any results yet.
Exactly. And that's why it was such a big deal for the Paris Climate Accords.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we pulled out.
Of course.
At one point. We're now back in it.
Back in, though.
But we pulled out for like 3 years, I believe. But there's a fear that even the Paris Climate Accords may not go far enough. There's a new report out by a group called the International Cryosphere Climate Initiative. It found that if the Paris Climate Accords hold up, there could still be plenty of disasters. Sea level could rise by close to 40 feet worldwide, which is,
if that happened,
a big amount,
my home state would be gone.
So it's a lot of the coasts
gone.
The coasts would be gone,
especially the east coast, I'll say, because the west coast has a bit more of a mountainous coast. The whole Florida would be gone. A lot of the east coast, all the way up, would disappear if that were to happen. A lot of people's homes, a lot of, you know,
and 40 feet is a big amount. But what makes this even shocking that
mm-hmm.
I want to introduce into our discussion is that this is a big difference from a 2021 report that found by 2100, it could only rise by just 3 feet.
Now we're really talking far out there. You know, sometimes you hear 2030, you hear 2050.
Yeah. We talked about 2090 last
week. 2090 last week. Now we're really pushing it.
I mean, who knows? If the show continued, we'd be talking about 2500, 3000.
The year 3000, like the Jonas Brothers sang about.
Now, here's a quote from the study of the author. His name is Rob DeConto. He works at the University of Massachusetts, and he made this comment to NBC News. He said, quote, "We might be reaching these temperature thresholds that we've been talking about for a long time sooner than we were thinking about just years ago." I think that report kind of illustrates, like, 40 feet compared
mm-hmm.
to just 3 feet years prior.
Yeah.
Like, I think people are forgetting how exponential we're seeing things.
It is, you know, I mean, it's just hard to think about, and I think people, it's hard to, all of these that we're talking about, they're estimates, they're guesses, you know, and so the closer we get, the more we're seeing the effects, and we're realizing that these estimates that we've believed for many years were actually not quite so accurate.
Exactly, and we've talked about this in detail in various episodes before, but we feel the need to reiterate that, you know, hydropower,
mm-hmm.
You know, land that, you know, isn't that high up, you know, Florida, California.
Yep.
This article gave examples of Antarctica, Greenland. But one thing that I found shocking, methane. A lot of methane would be released if ice melted
mm-hmm.
Through something called permafrost. When permafrost melts, it releases everything that it trapped when it froze.
Yes.
And a lot of times that involves trapping methane. So really quickly, permafrost is like when something is frozen for more than 2 years, so a decent amount of period of time. And a lot of Earth's surface get trapped, and organic material turns into methane,
mm-hmm.
and it gets released up in the air. So not only would we see sea levels rise, we'd also see more methane in the air, which, as we've established, is not good.
But we don't like to end our show or even just our topics on bad news. We do have a little bit of good news. They are trying to triple the amount of renewable energy capacity by 2030, and talks about fossil fuel phase outs, which
it's so hard to do.
It's 2030
is close for like a
seven
goal
years
like
away. And we're getting close to 6 years away because 2023 is almost over.
And let's be honest, they're probably not going to get it. But I think having these commitments on...
I think having a big goal like that that you can really reach for, even if you don't quite get there, even if you only get halfway, even if you only get, you know, it still would be a really positive outcome.
Exactly. And so I guess time will tell how this goes. I do remember something from the COP27 or 26 is that a lot of these big nations like US and China
mm-hmm.
gave out money to these smaller nations to help them for in the name of justice.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that will happen again.
We'll see.
Our money's going elsewhere.
Yes.
To other wars that are happening. For the second week in a row, we're not going to take a commercial break.
No, we're just going to keep on talking.
Because we have so much environmental news to squeeze.
And it's always nice when we can talk about stuff that is here in Arizona and here in Phoenix specifically. Because when we started this show, we actually had the concept that we were going to talk about a local topic and a more national, bigger topic. And, of course, quickly realized that while there are important things to talk about here in Arizona, not enough for every single episode, for as many episodes as we have had. But we're bringing it back local for this second topic. So according to Climate Central, the average temperature here in Phoenix has increased by more than 4.3 degrees since the 70s.
Wow. It takes a long time to change an average.
Yes. And in October of 2021, the Phoenix City Council approved the Phoenix Climate Action Plan. It wasn't something brand new. In 2009, actually, Portland voted to have a climate action plan as well, and Chicago had one in 2008. And I actually remember doing a story on the Phoenix Climate Action Plan for my 301 class,
oh, yes.
Which is where I learned about it to present it as a topic for the greenhouse in the first place. So finding the knowledge back in my brain to talk about it again now as an update 2 years later.
It's good that, you know, I mean... There weren't that many other places that had started before Phoenix. I know
mm-hmm.
Portland and Chicago are the examples we just gave.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting, though, how big of a gap, because they're pretty close together, 2008 and 2009, but it took till 2021 for
yeah.
Phoenix to
well,
do
my
one.
My question is, what happened in 2008 and 2009? Because people, as much as we like to talk about the climate, people weren't concerned about it.
You know, we talked about last week that at that time, I think a lot of people were really talking about global warming. The first time I remember like hearing about that and like the term global warming, I was young, I was in elementary school. When the first time I really in my cognizant like little brain remember this being a thing was when the movie WALL-E came out.
Oh, yeah. I love WALL-E.
It's a great movie. But that's a 2000s movie. And I think maybe it's a little more of the reason why so many young people are concerned about the environment than we realize, you know?
They left an impression. Pixar
exactly.
So this climate action plan was building on top of a reduction strategy, which Phoenix had since 2016. This document is very specific, this plan is. It's 213 pages long. And as the Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego said, she wrote this in the front of the action plan that I figured is important to read. It kind of sums up really well. She says, "This climate action plan outlines actions necessary to achieve this vision, charting the path to carbon neutrality and zero waste by 2050 or sooner. It is data-driven and uses the biannual greenhouse gas emissions inventory conducted in partnership with ASU to establish baseline emission levels and track its progress."
This is why we're number one in innovation.
Because we work with the city of Phoenix.
Yes, we do. So there were 11 key things in this Phoenix Climate Action Plan, but they are very wordy and it can be... I think when you try to read these documents and things, it can be really overwhelming.
It's hard to find.
The city of Phoenix did release kind of a guide a bit on their website, but I think you'd have to scroll back 2 years to find that now. But there were lots of things like, you know, quotes and things, claims like city operations, electrical use to carbon neutral by 2030, which is, you know, not too far away. So that would be really great. And another one was to prepare for 280,000 electric vehicles by 2030 and install 200 cool corridors by 2050. And if you don't know what a cool corridor is, it is a plan to basically create shaded walkways in the form of mostly trees. They want to plant a lot of trees that are designed or bred in a way to basically branch over and make a little nice little shaded sidewalk.
Exactly, and they hope to hit half of those by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
This is to really promote it not being hot on the sidewalks, which
yes.
will hopefully let people to walk, bike, use public transit, just be outside, because we all know how Phoenix can get. Part of these cool corridors would involve, quote, transit-oriented development districts, village cores, and centers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all good stuff. And what I really took away from this is pretty specific.
Yes.
In my business classes, in my strategic communications classes, really everywhere where I've learned about goal setting, they like to create something called SMART goals, which are like an abbreviation,
mm-hmm.
which just means like make it specific, make it measurable, make it something easy to track.
Mm-hmm.
And these goals do just that. Like you can envision what 280,000 electric vehicles look like, or what 200 cool corridors like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what made people think that this can have a real impact.
One thing I would love to see Phoenix do in terms of climate action and stuff like that is build out the light rail and have more routes, because right now it just goes in a straight line.
Yeah, it does.
Which is a start, but, you know, I used to take the light rail a lot before I had a car, and I've taken it a few times ever since I didn't, but I've noticed that I can't get to a lot of the places that I need to get on the light rail. I can't get to the grocery store. I can't get to the pet store to get food for my cat. I can't do that. So it would take a while and it would take some construction, but if they could build it out and have some more routes, I think that would be a great way to get people using public transportation as opposed to driving as often as they have to. Because I understand that Phoenix is hot, and in the middle of July, you might not, even with a cool corridor, you might not want to be out walking. But if you could take a train that has AC, that's something.
A lot of people joke that, you know, make Phoenix a walkable city. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem with a lot of America.
Yes.
Is that you need a car to survive.
Yes.
And it has a lot to do with, like, the way building codes are.
Mm-hmm.
But things would look so nice if everything was just in one place, and maybe, like, shops on the bottom
mm-hmm.
and places to live on the top. And I think what made it really hard is the fact that big cities developed and then smaller cities around it.
Mm-hmm.
When you had, like, small towns and villages and, like, things were very secluded
where
and
everybody
had more
walked.
Of a community feeling,
mm-hmm.
it's easier to walk.
Definitely. And I think it's also, again, hard in a place that's this hot, you know? And I think it would be just as hard if you live in Minnesota to walk somewhere in the middle of January.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I want more cities to be walkable. I absolutely do. But I think, realistically, I think it would be great to get better public transportation across a lot of the United States.
That's an easier problem to fix.
Yes.
And that's not easy either. I mean, we're having problems with our planes right now.
Yes.
How can we make stuff like public transportation work? Because it also has a stigma to it, I think.
Yeah. There
often
is.
Oftentimes a negative one.
Yes. I think it's also hard because America just has such a car culture, and these car companies are, you know, multi-billion dollar companies, and the same thing with gas companies. They don't want to see fossil fuels go away. There's a reason that a lot of corporations have a hand in the government more than a lot of people think. They're lobbyists. They have agendas. They donate to politicians that are going to put more money into their pockets. And I think that is one reason it has been so incredibly difficult to change that car culture, to get rid of fossil fuels, because these corporations don't want to go out of business. They're going to do everything they can to not do that.
Exactly. One thing, the biggest thing that stuck out to me, and I did a 301 story on this, so I know all about this, to increase the level of albedo on the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Albedo is how reflective a surface is, and they wanted to increase the level of albedo, which would make the roads more reflective so that it wouldn't absorb, roads wouldn't absorb any of the heat that's bearing
mm-hmm.
down. Because, as you know, Phoenix doesn't have a lot of shade.
Nope.
Which was, they were hoping cool corridors would fix.
Cool corridors.
Which they are actually working on. So the road
mm-hmm.
would absorb a lot. So they're trying to make the roads lighter, basically.
Yes.
Basically put a fresh coat of it. And I spoke to a source about this.
Nice.
And they told me that they had to have multiple iterations of this because they accidentally changed it too much in one way.
Oh.
And so people were complaining they couldn't see the road because it was reflecting too much in their eyes. So they're working on it. They're still in the very much of the research phase. It's a newer thing.
Yes.
But one thing is that they required a lot of money.
Yes. And where is that money going to come from? But the taxpayers. So, of course, the Phoenix GO bond, which is General Obligation Bond, so GO,
mm-hmm.
Created a fund for government institutions, $500 million approved for earlier this month. And, you know, it went to various causes, including arts and entertainment, parks, and et cetera. But $81 million of those dollars went to streets and storm drains.
Exactly. Which is where you get this albedo.
The albedo
thing.
Would be included in that $81
million. So here's where we want to break down that sub-budget
mm-hmm.
Of $81 million. Where it went to six basic things. Some helped, some didn't. Here's the things that didn't help. Or, well, a lot of it helped in some way. So $16 million went for something called a Vision Zero implementation. So this was for just making it easier to cross the street and, you know, tasks associated with, like, safety.
That helps with making a city more walkable, making it easier for pedestrians to cross the street.
People believing that it's okay to walk. That
yes.
is a good point. Because I didn't see, I forgot, I didn't think about it that way. I thought, you know, why would, how does crossing the street help the environment? But
makes it more walkable.
It makes it more walkable. $12 million for something they call equity-based transportation, which sounds good to me, maybe.
Public
It's not necessarily
transportation?
Public transportation, but
is it?
The fact, equity is a good word. People
mm-hmm.
like throw in equity. So we'll see where that goes. That wasn't specific. We were saying how specific this plan is. That wasn't that specific.
This part wasn't, yeah. This is not a smart goal.
Those were citywide. There was also $8 million for a flood mitigation project in Laveen, which
okay.
is great during monsoon season, which we do have here in Arizona.
Yes, a lot of people don't know that.
And then $19 million for a drainage project in Hookham, which is, you know, another place that would help, you know, the economy locally. The two biggest things, though, $2.5 million for storm drain replacement citywide
okay.
to help that water flow.
Yeah.
Because you don't want the water getting stuck on the roads.
Yeah, you don't want... I think it'd be hard. I've noticed, actually, not to talk about Florida on every single episode, Florida roads...
Another one where we talk
Florida
about.
Roads are built in a way that the water
See,
really
true.
Doesn't collect on the road unless it is, like, hurricane levels, you know, unless it is really, really extreme. Florida roads are built to because of how much it rains there. And I've noticed when I do drive in the rain, and I have been caught in a monsoon before when I'm out on the road unexpectedly, the Phoenix roads are not built at this moment to be equipped for that much water. I guess when they were, you know, founding the city and they built a lot of these roads out, they didn't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is really important to see that we're getting some storm drains put in and some replaced as well.
Exactly. So Phoenix voters, as you said at the top, passed this, the $81 million for streets and storm drains, but just the $500 million overall.
Mm-hmm.
It was split in, these $500 million was split into like four different categories, and all of them got approved. So
okay.
that's good. And here's why, as we start to wrap up, it kind of gives this mandate from voters
mm-hmm.
to the government that they want to see these policies. I think
yes.
on a previous show we talked about how people are getting sick of
mm-hmm.
stuff like this.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But taxpayers saying, we'll pay more if it helps the environment.
That's
Could
the
be
thing.
A good thing.
I think that a lot of people don't mind a small increase, because you think of how many millions of people live in Phoenix. A small increase, if they know it's doing good, if they know it's going towards the environment, can be a good thing. I think taxpayers get fed up with more money being taken and then it not going to anything good. If it's going
uh-huh.
to something good, something that's going to improve their lives, then why not? But if it just goes into some, you know, official's pocket, then not so much.
Exactly. So that is our last new episode
mm-hmm.
for The Greenhouse. We'll be back next week for one last ride.
A special finale.
We're going to recap everything we've been through.
Yes.
The ups and the downs over these last four seasons.
Yes.
For the second to last time, thanks for joining us. I'm Prathan Ball.
And I'm Anna Snow. And tune in next week for one last time of all things Planet Earth.
Bye, everyone.